plate a potential nugget.
Moving to, a related theme, right? Journaling is one thing that you talk about. And you make an interesting point in the book. You say that while journaling, we should not be judging ourselves or thoughts or feelings. What exactly do you mean by that? And, what's the nuance here?
Yeah. Great point. I'm glad you picked this sort of nuance here. It's a little sort of tricky space. So here is the thing, there are various techniques to reflect: meditation, journaling, positive affirmations, visualization, bunch of different ideas. But when we look at journaling, and it's quite true for meditation as well, but let's pick on journaling. The idea is that what we need to develop when we talk of developing self-awareness, we need to develop non-judgmental self-awareness. And why I say that? So, for example, you recognize, let's say you're journaling and you recognize routinely that you are, lately you've been very irritable, or lately you've been feeling a bit down, or lately you've been a bit envious, whatever that feeling may be, right? Now, so that's a feeling that we want to become aware of, right? But the moment, what is our natural tendency though? We all tend to judge ourselves because, and I'll come back to the point, we judge ourselves because there is a sense of incompleteness, inadequacy within us. And we are constantly trying to fill that void, and that's why we are judging, are we on track, are we not on track, and so forth. And it's that judgmental nature which forces us automatically to judge others as well, which we do all the time, including our, loved ones, our kids, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that makes things worse. So when we are talking about journaling or meditation and non-judgmental awareness, the idea is, so let's say you recognize that envy and the sadness and the irritability. If we judge it and we say, why do I feel like that? What's wrong with me? I'm not a good person. How could I be envious? Or I talk about being a coach. How could I be feeling sad? I thought I was, in the business of happiness, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think is going to happen to you? Do you think you're going to feel better or worse? Hmm. Clearly, you're going to feel worse. And what you're doing is, it's like your child, Deepak, who walks in and says, hypothetically, oh, I'm in middle school and, these two kids in my class, they are such bullies and they're so rude and this, that, and the other. And, kids don't like me and all that kind of stuff. Now, what are you going to do? You want to reassure your child, right? You want to sit them down and say, no, it's okay, it's totally fine, kids are kids and they do different things, and but you are a wonderful person and you're so good in so many ways and so on and so forth. But when we are just thinking that, oh, I have been sad, we are not reassuring ourselves, we are actually making it worse. It's like telling the child that, oh yeah, how could you do that, how could people not like you, what's wrong with you, that's just making it worse. So I think the starting point of all meditation and journaling and things like that is to create a non-judgmental space, because that is what is going to create greater self-acceptance, greater self-love. And all of that is actually automatically going to heal us from that void of the sense of inadequacy and incompleteness, because we start to then accept ourselves for who we are. And it's okay. And that doesn't also mean, Deepak, because the other typical sort of challenge there is, oh, if I'm being like that and everything is fine, then, will I become complacent? And it's not that. We all have the drive to get better and we will keep getting better. But it's just that oftentimes we are trying to get better from a place of inadequacy. That only if I get better will I be complete. And my point is, no, you are already whole, complete, and enough the way you are and where you are right now at this very instant, every single human being. And we want to get better. So that's the reason why this non-judgmental self-awareness is crucial, because the judgmental part is the thinking mind which makes things worse. If we can subdue that, then slowly we become aware, yeah, I've been sad last few days, and that's okay. That sadness is going to pass. It will pass, like every feeling. the excitement and the joy will also pass, and so will the sadness and the irritability. Both will pass if we don't engage with it. If we engage with it, it will grow.
Hmm.
Did I answer your question?
Makes a lot of sense, Rajiv. I was just sort of processing it. You know, one of the people I spoke to at the podcast was a lady called Tasha Urich, who's done a lot of work around this notion of self-awareness, you know, the internal and the external self-awareness in terms of how others see us. And she actually says, you know, while journaling, she suggests that we use the what question rather than the why question. She says the what keeps us grounded on the facts, you know, what happened. The why often takes us to a place of judgment. I'm just sort of connecting it with what you just said. But it's interesting that you also link it to this notion of adequacy and sort of growth from a place of contentment and adequacy rather than a place of fear and insecurity and inadequacy. That's an interesting nuance.
Yeah, because, you know, the thing is that no amount of self-improvement is going to help unless we develop self-acceptance.
Hmm.
Because you will improve, but as you know, and I know from our lives and our constant pursuit of growth, is that you climb the next hill, and then you, before you settle down, you're looking at the next one. Because we can always keep growing in whatever field. Maybe earlier we were trying to do it in a corporate ladder and a financial and, you know, other ways. Now it may be the ladder of self-growth. But still, we can get caught up in the same sort of routine, same vicious cycle, that it's never enough.
And earlier, it's interesting. Sorry.
Yeah. No,
it's
no,
an
no.
Interesting,
I was just
paradigm,
saying.
Because if I link it back to a term that was used when I was in McKinsey, you know, and there was this phrase "insecure overachievers" to a lot of the consultants, right? And what you're actually saying is, you know, let's decouple the two. Let's not, insecurity is not a prerequisite for achievement or growth, right? It's actually maybe counterproductive to the other side.
Yeah, exactly. So, then we follow what we deeply, what our heart and soul desire. So we are able to express ourselves more fully when we are in that state.
Something similar came up in my conversation with Tasha Urich, a leading self-awareness researcher who's written the book Insight. She's spoken to hundreds of leaders on their self-awareness practices. She speaks about the risk of us falling down the rabbit hole of rumination and discusses that here.
I knew that we would find that the more people introspected, the better off they'd be. And that was the opposite of what our data showed. So we found that people who self-reflected often were more anxious, more stressed, more depressed, less satisfied with their jobs and their relationships. They were even less in control of their lives. And we're just sitting there going, oh my gosh, maybe self-awareness is bad, right? Maybe delusion is actually what we want to be fostering, because this doesn't seem like it makes sense. And as we started to dig into some of the data, we started to discover that thankfully, it's not that introspection in and of itself is bad. It's just that the way most of us introspect is completely wrong. And the best way to illustrate this, you know, again, without having 2 hours to delve into it, is to think about probably what the most common introspective question is for most people, which is the question, why? So we might be trying to understand why we're in a bad mood. You know, you could say, why am I so upset after that conversation with my coworker? Or we might be trying to understand a bad outcome. You know, like, why didn't I get that promotion? Or we might be even trying to understand why we believe what we believe. You know, why do I want that promotion? But as it turns out, those questions, not only do they lead us away from true insight about ourselves, they give us a false sense of confidence about our knowledge. So, for example, Sigmund Freud was wrong. He believed in his work that people could access their unconscious, right? So like, really, why am I upset? If I just excavate, if I just think long and hard and ask that why question, I can find the answer. But what research has shown for, you know, decades actually, is that no matter how hard we try, we can't access so many of those things. It's what I mentioned earlier about the behavior and emotion and knowledge blindness. Mm-hmm. So what happens is we find an answer that feels true, even if it's wrong. So that's an example of where it can lead us away from the truth rather than towards it. Another reason why is a really dangerous question, introspectively, is it has been shown over and over and over to depress us. You know, you think about it, like, why didn't I get that promotion? If you're not careful, you can start asking questions where the answers are, well, because I'm just a fundamentally bad person and who would want to promote me? And you can kind of get stuck in, I call it the rabbit hole of rumination. And so what we wanted to do in our study was understand, okay, if why is the wrong question, what is the right question? You know, what are these unicorns doing differently than the rest of us? And it took us a little while to find this pattern, but we discovered that when unicorns introspected, they almost never asked why questions. They asked what questions. And at first I thought, like, oh, that's just a weird sort of fluke or a weird nuance. But as we started to look into it, it started to make a huge amount of sense. So one example would be, you know, going back to the question, why didn't I get that promotion? Mm-hmm. Unicorns, if they were in that situation, wouldn't ask themselves that question. Here's some questions they might have asked instead. What did I learn that can help me be better positioned in the future? Or what can I do to close the gap between, you know, where I thought I was and where I need to be? Or what support can I enlist from the people around me to help me, you know, achieve this goal the next time I set it? Or, you know, going back to why am I so upset about that conversation with my coworker? They might instead ask, well, what part of that situation did I own? Or what can I do differently in the future to avoid that kind of conversation with that person? And so what we found was asking what instead of why really helps us avoid so many of the pitfalls of introspection, where we, you know, we're excavating for the truth that we're never going to find, and we're focusing on our problems and feeling victimized and disempowered. So I think what I loved about that is it's a really tangible tool that I think we can take away. It seems subtle, but the difference is just huge. And I'm speaking from personal experience as I've started to use that as well.
Back to what Rajiv says, focusing on the what ensures that we stay focused on the facts rather than getting too judgmental and going down the rabbit hole of rumination.